One, we are checking in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy for the first Tacky Talk in a couple of weeks. Tacky,
Hey, good to see you, Joe. I hope you had a good Labor Day weekend, and hope everyone listening had a good weekend. And I know it's some of us considers this the back to school, back to work, end of summer kind of time period. But as you know, you and I never truly sleep.
exactly right. There really is no downtime, especially when you can communicate like we're doing right now.
Absolutely. I know it was a little crazy for you last week between everything and the elections, and my schedule got a little bit nutty on meetings last week too. So it's this is what happened, folks. We sometimes skip a week or two.
That's right. But the good thing is it gives us so much more to talk about when we do get together.
There's no shortage of it. Although if we want to go nice and soft, maybe we can discuss like a macaroni and cheese recipe. I mean, there's always that option.
Maybe in the wintertime. That's like a winter theme. Not now, though. We've got so. Are you kidding? We've had a primary election. We've had a presidential debate. We've had interesting issues here in the city. We've had a hurricane. Lots of stuff going on, Techie.
It has been a very active couple of weeks, and obviously, for myself, long before I got elected, by the way, I was very interested in elections and debates and campaigns, not just at the national level, but also local campaigns. I've always had a very strong interest long before I got elected to office on this stuff. So election day for me is like, you don't sleep. You're just constantly hitting refresh on the computer screen. In the old days, you just glue yourself to every TV station on 24-hour cable and kept switching around. And you hope QATV was still on, whether you guys were still awake going deep into the night if it was like a local election where there was issues. For example, like the Delahunt Johnson year, you know, the hanging Chad count where, you know, everybody is at City Hall because he didn't have the internet back then. And people would be just hanging around City Hall trying to see what the border registrars, voter registrars would be doing next because there's a whole lot of question marks what was going on.
Yes. Oh, I spent many an election night in the council chambers watching those numbers up on the screen and waiting for, you know, cheers or groans, depending on the results.
Yeah, I've been in the back of the council chamber, the older council chamber, when it was before it was renovated, hanging in the back there, no one really noticing as I'm kind of like writing down numbers, and we had no cell phones at the time. So
that's right. Yeah.
You find a payphone to report back in what you just heard. One's got the little scraps of paper in front of them. So I am dating myself a bit.
Yeah, well, same here too, but I know this is how it used to be done, kids today. You don't know.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, we have like a real addiction to watching campaigns.
Any surprises for you here in Massachusetts last week?
We had some near misses. Marjorie Decker in Cambridge lost going into the final, but when they finally finished the tally on absentee and early balloting, she goes up. So it was like she lost by 40, but won by 41. So it was an 81 vote shift. She's the incumbent Cambridge rep, chair of public health. And while nobody is truly safe, let's be honest about that, you only degrees of safety. That was a pretty surprisingly tough campaign, I think, in a lot of people's minds regarding the fact that she's been a long time elected in Cambridge, especially, you know, coming off the city council, which is a very active council in Cambridge. And she's actually a very strong leader in the legislature and a strong leader in the Cambridge community. That was actually one that was a little close. And those are aware that the Scantron machine, as we talked about, the Johnson Delahunt race and hanging chads, were very, very accurate. So it is very unlikely that a recount will flip it. Generally have to get within 5 votes to have a shot. Once you cross into double digits, very low probability the machines are wrong because you have to physically see the ballots to see if anything was spoiled. And then Susan Gifford, Republican colleague of ours, didn't win re-election in primary. Bit surprised, long-time rep in Republican areas. Very rare you see a Republican beat a Republican. This is obviously a big Democratic state, so you do see more Democratic primaries being more interesting, but you don't often see a Republican beat a Republican primary here, an incumbent Republican. And my friend Roddy Malm, who's a member of the House Asian Caucus, didn't win re-election. He's had a lot of tough races in the past decade. And this time in another freeway race, he consistently gets freeway race primaries. And this time he unfortunately didn't make the cut. He lost by 7 points. So, we had a couple of incumbents lose one in each party, a couple of close calls, several levels, including the Republican Matt Muniatori. Can't pronounce his right name right. He's running for the Barnes Plymouth, the Barnstable district. So that's swath down the Cape. Plymouth, the Barnstable, that's swath of state Senate in the Republican primary. And he, I think we believe he squeaked out of there as Republican primary winner. He's the incumbent state rep. So it was like he thought he'd be just fine. And then, you never know. And that Republican primary was a lot tighter than we expected.
Right, yeah, and actually three candidates from Quincy on the ballot for Register of Deeds, Norfolk County, for Governor's Council, and there was one other one as well. Oh yeah, U.S. Senate.
Oh yeah. Joe, I think we kind of predicted where the U.S. Senate one was going to go. The Republican primaries have really gotten smaller and smaller in the vote numbers because not just because of registration issues, it is candidate, what drives the people to vote for candidates. And given the national impact on the rhetoric leading down to our level of government, people do leave the Republican and Democratic Party. Both parties have suffered loss of party affiliation by voters because of that. And also results in declining voters in primaries. And this was actually Massachusetts situation. It appears to be more true for Republican Party than it is for Democrats. Where Democrats will get a resurgence of registration during presidential years and then it'll taper off again a couple of years later and they come back up again. Republicans don't grow registration at the same rate. And is reflective in the size of the primary and the size of the camp contests there. So, as I like to remind folks, when your political party keeps shrinking in size in terms of registration, the number of participants in that primary shrinks too, which means your audience keeps shrinking, which means you keep have to focus in on much more narrow group of folks, which do not reflect the mainstream population, meaning you're now focusing on a population of 10 to 15% or maybe even less of that type of voter base. But the remaining 85-ish plus percent of the voter base doesn't reflect that small portion. So it's actually very hard to run, particularly statewide, in a primary for Democrat Republican, to be perfectly honest with everyone, because of the fact that it's a totally different size base of who you need to appear to. And our council president here tried to appeal to a very very specific size base Republican statewide, and it didn't go well, and even in Quincy, his numbers were not that good.
Yeah, it's well, I mean, there was about an 18.5% turnout here in Quincy, and the majority, just like across the state here in Quincy, are unenrolled.
Yeah, but I think if we break it down by party affiliation, I think it's about 15-ish percent
Yes.
of Democrats came out, of total voters came out. I think it was close to 5%.
Yeah.
Give or take of Republican voters came out. So it's still a 3-to-1 margin on Democrat voters coming out in primaries, which will be reflected in the final election as well. The ratio just moved up. And then Republican, only 5% of registered voters in Quincy that Republicans came out. So it's still very, very small for both parties. I mean, there's a lot of emphasis on the total number of voters, which are not very high, but you have to really break it down to each political party to show the interest in that party's primary.
Yep, absolutely right. Those well, it's a learning experience, right? Especially for first time out.
Well, there's also us data nerds that like to look at these percentages and kind of put them in better context about how we see the world in terms of things that turn out. But
Right.
yeah, first time running statewide is awful. I mean, it ain't easy to do. I'm not going to lie to you, but much less transitioning for the first time to a party system from a non-party election system in Quincy. For better or for worse, this kind of went the way it played out. There's a lot of inside baseball, especially inside the Republican Party, because it's such a small voting base now that if you got the inside track with the city, town, Republican Party establishment folks, that improves your odds tremendously because the infrastructure is going to be there for that Republican primary candidate. And if you can't convinced that local infrastructure in the 351 plus perhaps county, if they have an active county party system, You got to work through that, plus whatever Republican elected officials there are, and those Republican elected officials tend to be in very strong Republican elected districts. So just there's a lot of money, but it's also a lot of time, and you have to understand the dynamics of the party you're running in. The Democrats are not exactly the same. Democrats are a much larger party, much more diversified, much more, I won't say conflicted, but generally somewhat a little broader when you go from community to community. As a result, there's not as monolithic in some ways. When you shrink in size, you become more of a monolith in position. When you grow in size, it tends to diversify.
Did you watch the presidential debate, Jackie?
Yeah, if I was going to watch, no joke, like 15 minutes, and maybe this is going to be something we've seen already before. And by the time I realized that, I actually finished the 1:45 and finished the ABC commentary afterwards. I will. I it's a surprise every time I watch this type of debate.
You're not gonna call a winner.
Well, okay, I'll be frank about it. I agree with the polling. Vice President Harris definitely did win that debate. That's no question there. This is definitely a presentation of two different types of candidates and what professionalism, what you like in each candidate. I mean, let's go down to it. I agree with the analysis that both sides didn't have a whole lot of thick policy. This was, in the vice president's case, a chance to introduce herself to the public, really on a broad stage. Supposedly 90 million screens were watching this. Doesn't mean individuals, 90 million screens were tuned in, which is a lot, actually, nowadays. That tuned in live, and it gives herself to create a contrast between her and former president, and let the audience kind of choose what level of professionalism would you like in your president. That's the way I kind of perceive it, and this is what you're going to get. And it also changed the dynamic significantly because generationally, we're talking definitely near 20-year di generational difference too. Unlike President Biden and former President Trump, they were a lot closer in generation. Even with Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, they were a little bit closer in generational as well. So this is actually kind of a real broad generational gap between the two candidates. And Jimmy, I mean, a lot of it was really about, this is the type of individual I am. This is the level of professional I am. This is who I am. And kind of it was my, like a lot of an introduction. So, in terms of scoring on points to demonstrate they have the professional capacity, on presentation, it's clearly Harris. There's really no doubt.
Yeah, the whole debate format though has changed. It's like you say, it's more of a presentation than a debate. I mean, a debate you think of like I don't know the Nixon Kennedy era or even the Reagan era of the back and forth. You don't have that so much anymore.
Well, they definitely want to engage in back and forth. David Muir really had to try to control the mic. Was David Muir and Lindsay, I remember her last name now.
I can't think of it either. The ABC news commentator.
Yeah, they were really trying to control the back and forth. I mean, whether or not to have the mics on and off during, not apparently turning off the mics does not stop them from saying anything. Turning off the mic clearly does not work, folks, as you've watched the debate. But it's really trying to pin down into, whether or not they would actually answer the question. As we do here all the time, Joe, on an almost weekly basis, it's not like you and me haven't played cat and mouse and answering questions. I
It's
mean,
true.
very true. The two of us do play cat and mouse sometimes. But they really want to get try to reduce the cat and mouse by really just trying to pin people down. And secondly, the last, I mean, let's be frank about this. During the Trump era of campaigning the last 8 odd years, debates is not about a direct questioning of another person's statement. It becomes a degenerates to name calling and basic accusations and more name calling, especially from former President Trump. I mean, let's just call it what it is. And now that you have folks in could run debates, like you lose complete control and it becomes like a free for all.
Yeah, this is what I mean. They don't They don't ask each other, pertinent questions anymore. They just yell at each other.
Yeah, and that's very problematic. And it really, honestly, really has become the Trump era of debating. That is what it is, as opposed to actually follow up on a concrete point. It degenerates to things like Joe Biden hates you.
Right.
I mean, if come on, folks. I mean, if
What
you
is
thought,
that? That tells me nothing. It does nothing for me. Right. Yeah.
yeah, but if you think that's like a substantive issue, or you think that was funny, well, I'm sorry. You really should take a look at the mirror of who you are. I mean,
Yeah.
it's if you think that acceptable, then please go look in the mirror and just say to yourself, that was acceptable, and
So,
see.
well, it's really unfortunate. I mean, it's something you wouldn't even see like on a high school debate team,
No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't
Right.
see this in any level except for the highest office in government. And it's really unfortunate. They can't do the town meeting format. I personally didn't la I do not like the town meeting format of debate. I think it's too talk showy and too not consequential to everyone in the audience watching in TV land, because at least with TV news anchors who do the research before they ask the question, and they would have polling data, what's important to general public, it gets into too much minutia on town meeting format debates, which we will not see again, I think, for a long time.
Right. It's very easy to set that format up too,
Oh, you
to
can
have it
rig the thing.
pre-planned, yeah.
Yeah, it's rigged. I mean,
Yeah.
no, this thing should be under some delusion that those audience members are not rigged by the campaigns. I mean, duh.
Correct. Yeah.
It's the easiest thing you could do.
Right.
So the campaigns just plant the questions. But I mean, yeah, I mean, and also we don't have many of them. I mean, three debates was once almost the standard minimum three. You can get We only got one.
Right. This part of what I was saying about back in the Nixon Kennedy era, how many were there? There were tons.
Yeah, I mean, even like a 12 years ago, you had at least three.
That's true.
Sometimes
Yep.
you got to five. You also had like primary. Well, there was real no primary this year in either
No.
party. But I mean, you used to have primary debates that wasn't like the summer before. I mean, at least it
Right.
feels a little closer when you're going to make a decision. I mean,
Yeah. Yeah.
the media has changed on this, but that's also, a lot of exposure. I mean, the reality is that with direct email fundraising, with social media, with 24-hour news, with every other podcaster, not us, we're good people, Joe. We enjoy our podcasting together. But I mean, people can be their own talking heads. You can send Sarah gets out and just use social media as your Sarah gets. It really had campaigning's really changed from when we were both kids. We only had three TV stations. You had to tune in, and if you're in California, obviously at the time differential, you may not be able to watch the debate at
That's
a
right.
what time it started because you're still at work.
Right.
So,
Yeah, if it starts at 8 o'clock and still 5 o'clock here or something, yeah.
yeah, I mean, candidate campaigning has really changed over the course of many years. I mean, remember Bill Clinton was Arsenio Hall.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, late-night talk shows became part of a presidential format to reach the
Yes.
audience, bypassing the tradition of the big three news networks.
Yeah, that's right.
24/7 news created a friendly audiences. I'm not going to get into this point. Everyone's going to, beat me up on this one. But frankly, different news media outlets on the 24-hour stations plus the web and podcast creates friendly environments for candidates where, frankly, they're all softball. And
Right,
that's,
because you need to fill that time. Right, yeah.
yeah, and you're going to pick a podcaster or a 24-hour news network that you feel that you're going to get reinforce po your positive message or negative message, as the case may be. They just reinforce it, and the audience watching is already kind of part of or leaning towards you
It's
anyway.
preaching to the choir, as they say. Yeah.
And they're already going to believe you. I mean, as opposed to trying to reach undecided audiences. And I think what undecided audiences' biggest challenge is really, where are you going to get the information from? And I think undecided stay undecided longer.
Yeah. I think we should even bother with vice presidential debates.
It's always been a little bit of a sideshow for me in vice presidential debates because it's one of those debates where anything can happen.
That's true.
And sometimes sad things can happen. I remember the was it Ed Navarro who was Ross Perot's vice president? And
Oh, yeah.
his hearing aid had an issue. And he why am I here? Who I am? The
I
state.
do remember that. Yes, that was unfortunate. Yeah.
That was very unfortunate because he was making a, if you actually listen to the whole context of the debate, it was actually a philosophical question to try to cohesive, more of a cohesive macro picture, and it got reduced to a blundering old man picture, which was very, very, very sad, by the way, to watch. I was like, oh yeah, that's unfortunate. And then we find out later his hearing aid died under the debate stage, and just made things just optics was just bad optics at
And
the
that's all
end.
it takes, you know.
That's what it takes. It just
To
takes
staff
one.
Howard Dean, one yell demised him.
Oh, tomato, tomato. Remember, Dan
That,
Quayle?
oh, the potato. Yes.
I can't spell either, folks. My spelling is atrocious.
But we still remember it. How many years ago was that?
And I remind folks, there's always things that we think our mind are not real. I mean, Sarah Palin saying she can see Russia from her window, it was not her. That was Tina Fey on Saturday Night Live.
That's right.
But people think it's her, which, again, this is an interesting concept of the Mandela effect. You think something's true, but it was never true. But it's such part of the human conscious stream of culture, part of our culture that we think that it is true. But that's a, yeah, you can look it up online now because we have, YouTube, and you can see the Tina Fey skit. And she did a wonderful parody of Sarah Palin, but it was not Sarah Palin.
Right. Well, it's like, yeah, it was like Dana Carvey did George Bush so well too. Yeah.
Oh yeah, Dana Carvey was very good. George Bush, George H. Bush.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Oh boy. Okay, what, by the way, what's going on at the State House these days?
Well, we're still moving some smaller bills out. We did some name changes regarding certain agencies who have persons with developmental issues to try to update our agency names to reflect those changes. That's kind of the latest one. We did an assisted living bill, which I don't know if we talked about that last time, but we'll might as well cover it again. We Conference Report released a assisted living facility bill. This is actually a post-COVID reaction. It took us quite a few terms to sort out about the lack of oversight regarding assisted living facilities, given the high death rate from COVID on that, and a lot of challenges associated with the fact that there's no real way for families to report trouble or problems they see to DPH. So we've moved forward on putting together a regulatory structure to give more accountability on assisted living facilities, nursing homes, and that. Conference report came out, and the legislature passed that no problem, and before the governor. So, we are still moving some smaller conference committee issues out that we all know are not controversial in the end, and we probably will get a few more. I suspect right around the beginning of October, things will probably slow down as people shift gears towards the final election cycle. And I will continue to have chats with the speaker's office as well as the Committee on Ways and Means regarding some other bills I have of interest that are small, and as we talk a lot about little technical bills that aren't very interesting, to try to move them out because certain industries need technical updates in the law. So, I'll be doing that as the follows. I'm very aware of the calendar as we hit the season towards November, a few weeks out in November, the place slows down again.
I do want to ask you about an issue that came up here at the Quincy City Council meeting earlier this week, Tacky, with regards to the right to shelter law. And I'm sure you're aware they passed a resolution asking for an amendment to that law. And how do you feel about that?
Well, let's go to my phone here, and I'm gonna bring my phone here and read you the Patriot Ledger title. What are we doing here? The title of the story from the Patriot Ledger is "Migrant Crisis: Quincy City Council Votes to Kick Them Out of Shelters." That is the Patriot Ledger title of this, of what you were just talking about, that they put out as an article. And, John Keehan, myself, and Bruce Ayers sent statements in. And those who aren't aware, we're trying to do my best to summarize, and you can correct me, Joe, is that the city council voted 6-3 to send a resolution to the legislature, basically asking us to change the right to shelter law to limit it to 6 months' stay and only for Massachusetts residents.
Essentially, that's correct. Yes.
Now, because of the situation that we've talked about multiple times here, that we never created, nor did we anticipate, could have possibly ever anticipated happening. Now, we are having a shelter crisis of just under 7,500 folks, families, not folks, 700 families, in the shelter system that's pushed us to the breaking point. And Quincy is not a shelter city. Quincy is a emergency triage city. We have a welcome center. It's a triage. You come in, you have your medical care checked in, you confirm your identity, you confirm you have your temporary visa, we get you signed up for work permits. If it's like a legit medical urgent care situation, we'll get you to the emergency room. It is pregnant, it is children. I've been there twice at different times, and we'll tell you right up. If you don't believe me, you're more than welcome to walk in, take a visit, and say hello. It is not 24/7 facility, it's business hours. But the medical part is open on the weekends. So, as you are aware, the system is full. We converted a prison in was it
Norfolk, I think.
Norfolk to emergency shelter. And locally, they're unfortunately sleeping at the Wallace and Train Station. I dare anybody tell me the last time they saw a child or pregnant woman sleeping in the streets of Massachusetts. I repeat again, it does happen. It is extremely rare to see. It's one of the things I tell folks that if you've never seen it, you see it for the first time, it never dawned on you, it has never happened before. So the legislature has been putting more guardrails regarding the governor, but what are they doing with this? And we want more accountability of how the governor is spending the money to do this program. And it's not just emergency shelter. It's about providing support for school systems that have children coming in that were not expected, ESL classes. Obviously, we want people vaccinated. Like, measles is a real thing. I didn't realize kids weren't getting vaccinated for measles really as much as they used to. I mean, a lot of these things that we've not seen here are real in other places. So it's more than just the shelter cost that the state's covering. And the governor has limited stays to 90 days. We are prioritizing Massachusetts residents first. So Massachusetts residents gets priority under the governor. Haley Driscoll put that in place. And there's a 5-day emergency shelter component, but can end up having denied more time in the shelter. So it's actually kind of a little quirky part where you get 5 days, but you can't get 90-day stay. If it is a transitional component. It's a little tricky what I just said because it's more than what I'm saying because there's like a checklist involved in that. So I'm kind of oversimplifying that, but they are really trying to keep the shelters folks keeping in the sense of constantly keeping rotation. If you have severe disabilities or active job seeker, you can get an extension. And of course, if you got someplace to go and we can confirm with you to have someplace to go, we'll find a way to get you there. So if you got somebody in state that will take you in and we know will take you, we'll find you a way to get you there. If you have someplace out of state that will take you and we know you have a destination that's legitimate, we will get you there. So, Massachusetts is a very compassionate state. We're very humane folks in the state. I've said before over and over again, I don't want to hear the word but. And I think it's that simple. Senator Keenan did bring up correctly that you do have situations where people not have their ID right away. Domestic violence victims are pretty much top on that list. When you're trying to flee an abuser, you don't think about what you're going to grab. You need to get out. And when you hit that break point in your life and you need real help and you just gotta go, you take the essentials, which is basically you and your kids, if you have children, and just find safety. And under the council proposal, they would deny folks that are in bad situations, such as domestic violence, or perhaps you got thrown onto the street by your parents in a domestic situation, and you have no ID, you got nowhere to go. Well, under the city council proposal, the lack of compassion and thoughtfulness there would put those folks in jeopardy on the streets of Massachusetts with no help. And this is what they have proposed at the city council level.
As I read it, the resolution stated that state-supported housing would be allowed only for Massachusetts residents at least 6 months and are U.S. citizens or lawful permanent residents of the country.
So that requires you to provide identification.
Okay. Yep.
So let's say you are on the border of Massachusetts and you just flee your domestic abuse or parents or guardians, or you decided, you're in a crisis state, perhaps substance abuse, perhaps human trafficking, and you come from another state, not necessarily from another country, you have no identification, you walk in for help. The answer is going to be no.
I see. Okay.
Under the council's proposal.
Yeah. So it sounds like essentially the governor has kind of amended it already, right?
Yes, it's already been addressed. We already prioritize Massachusetts residents. It is a misconception, as I read in the Quincy Sun, that the migrants here are somehow not here legally. They are have temporary visas. The Welcome Center confirms their temporary visas. They cannot get a work permit if they don't have the temporary visas. The federal government is in charge of issuing those temporary visas. And that's some bad information the council likes to put out, apparently. I'm trying to remember who actually went to the council. I'm trying well, you want to have some fun, Joe. You can ask which ones of the counselors actually went to the Welcome Center public hearing. I was there at the Central Middle School. And how many have actually visited the Welcome Center? The delegation has definitely gone, as well as the mayor and some of the counselors. But I mean, you got to see it to understand it. And this issue about resource reallocation, which is kind of a myth, and here's why. We plugged a hole in last year's, and going to be into this year's too, migrant shelter crisis of ARPA money, as I've repeated time and time again. Governor Baker kept hiding stuff from the legislature, and we finally found it in the Governor Healey. And we at least have a stopgap measure where baseline budget was not affected in a severe way by using ARPA money to fill in the gap. And ARPA money has to be consumed, used, utilized by 2025. So we do have a somewhat of a temporary situation. At no point that Chapter 7, local aid was affected. Didn't affect one Shannon Grant, didn't affect one public library, did not affect one senior center. None of them got cuts. They all got increases, pretty much. Veteran services got increased. We actually passed a veterans bill that, provide tax credits. Dealt with the license plate issue regarding not to pay for license plates. Redirect general fund monies to the soldiers' homes to cover the gap.
Yes, the HERO Act, I think it was called, right?
Oh yes, if the council was paying attention, we are supporting a lot of veteran services, like straight up services. We're a service-driven state mentality. We don't construct or put things into structures. We are, addressing real life people problems the best we can. And that's what we do at the state level. We're service funded, right? We have fully funded school breakfasts and school lunches. Your city tax property tax dollars are not paying for school breakfast and school lunches, nor emergency food for undernourished children. The WIC program is a state program too, right? That is not paid by your property tax dollars. That is paid by your state tax dollars as a collective of Massachusetts. And Quincy, being a high service city, honestly get a disproportional share compared to a wealthy city. So if you're in a wealthy city, we have a higher income bracket. They obviously pay more taxes because they're in a higher income bracket. But in terms of return of services, they don't get as much because we have a larger population that would benefit more from, school lunch, school breakfast, the WIC program, a LIHEAP for low-income assisted heating for the wintertime, which is going to be coming up soon, and a whole ton of programs here. And this is kind of the whole thing about being in Quincy, as I like to say, is that unlike smaller communities or wealthier communities, a lot of the human service programs will be veterans or kids in need. Disproportionately comes to our city. I'm very aware of that because you hear from colleagues in smaller communities as well as wealthier communities regarding disproportionate use of state tax dollars back to cities like Quincy.
Right. Yep. Yeah. So suffice to say, you don't support that amendment.
Well, you correctly pointed out a bit earlier, it's already been addressed.
Yeah.
And me, well, I won't speak for the other members of the delegation because we talk among ourselves, but I mean, we do not like red herrings. We do not do this to you. If you like to, the delegation to perhaps make statements, we generally like to keep it to ourselves. I do have an opinion about everything, like everyone else is entitled to opinion. I do state it's my opinion. But at the same time, though, you know, people shouldn't engage in this, I get, you get. Okay, I mean, it's just not fair. I don't like weaponizing one group against another. It's very troubling. So at the Welcome Center public meeting, it became a weaponization issue. And it's being weaponized by folks who actually do not work in those places that need the services with people. It's just a good rallying cry. And it's troubling. I find it very troubling. But the voters can decide how to do that. I don't engage in that practice. I do not pit one demographic and others against another demographic. I'm trying to do my best to help out everybody by listening to their concerns and trying to understand what's going on. Sometimes you're not going to like my decision. You're not going to like my answer. And that's, but I gave you an answer, and that's how it goes. And you're not going to be happy sometimes. I'm not oblivious to that. I've been doing this enough, and not afraid of it. So, but yeah, it's sad and unfortunate. That's what I'm just
Get back to veterans for a minute. I had a chance to meet the a representative from the new Office of the Veteran Advocate in Massachusetts, which apparently is now separate from the Department of Veteran Services, Mr. Robert Notch. And he told me that the office was created in response to, the tragedy from the pandemic at the soldiers' homes.
yeah, this was a part of the another pandemic response that none of us would ever have conceived possible if not for the pandemic creating such a crisis. And it's not to replace a veteran service agent. It's not replacing any agency in Executive Office of Veterans Affairs. It is a more of a advocate and more direct contact with veterans who are having opinions and questions, concerns about how things operate. It also gives the ability to help coordinate a lot of veteran service agents around the state. Veteran Service is actually a pretty big network. It also provides some more uniform guidance for the legislature by putting everything more into one location as kind of a third depart like a third party look at the whole system.
Kind of like an ombudsman, if you will, role at a newspaper.
Yeah, and it's run by veterans that are doing this. Yeah, but they're outside of the politics, I think, like to put it between the executive office and the local. And then there are also state-appointed veterans agents around the state, not just city and town veterans agents. It's
I
really
didn't
cool.
know that.
Yeah, Governor Baker and some of these other communities do have state-appointed veteran agents. I know who some of them are appointed by Governor Baker at the time, and that's how I learned it existed because a former colleague of mine got appointed. I was like, "What? That's a thing?"
Right, yeah, it's first I
Appointed by
heard
the
of that
mayor.
too.
Yeah, exactly. Just because they do it in Quincy doesn't mean it's done everywhere, folks. Everywhere is different. So
Right,
I.
right.
You know, I go, oh yeah, the mayor does it. I'm like, no, they don't. I'm like, what? What do you mean the mayor doesn't appoint the veterans agent? So yeah, just because it's done here doesn't mean it's done everywhere. But yeah, I had a meeting with his staff, and it was a wonderful meeting. They're actually in North Quincy on Hancock Street.
Yes, yeah.
And I look forward to more conversations with them as they continue their conversations with a lot of different groups. And the most refreshing part about talking to his staff was the fact that it was definitely outside of the politics of it all, so to speak.
Exactly. Yeah, that's this. I came away with the same reaction, Tacky. So I'm looking forward to. I invited him to come back here and speak more in depth about his office and his goals. So I look forward to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And they definitely have want to maximize care and services to those who need it the most. And and the legislature, as I said before, is really a service dedicated approach to things, and the more information we get, the better we can provide.
Yeah, it's Veterans Day is not far off, so it's certainly going to be in the forefront of folks' minds too.
Yeah.
I saw a supplemental budget passed this week. Was that right?
We close our budget.
Oh.
So we have a floating problem here. One is a supplemental budget that's just paying our bills from the previous fiscal year. that's still sitting in Conference Committee. Now we're approaching end of our well fiscal year end, but closing of our books. So the state comptroller on August 1st will officially close the books of the previous fiscal cycle. All the
Oh, okay.
findings will be made. So the governor files this closeout somewhat in advance of the final closeout. So it's not really a supplemental budget, it's a reconciliation.
I see. So the money's
So,
there, just okay, I understand. Yep.
yeah, it's going to change a little bit. Well, maybe. I mean, it depends what the comptroller finally says, but the
Right.
comptroller is not wrong. I mean, the comptroller is not wrong. I'm just telling you right now, those guys have one job and they do it really well, is to make
Yep.
sure the reconciliation is correct. So what happens, the state auditor will get the comptroller as well and will recheck the comptroller's numbers, which will not be wrong. And then they will submit, well, they've already submitted it, but there'll be this reconciliation will get adjusted when we go to the month of October, and then we'll just pass that as a formality to the governor's as the final reconciliation. So
Gotcha. Okay.
wicked boring, folks.
No, now that you explain it, I understand. I thought it was a separate coming in separate, but it's not.
You're talking about a guy that's done this with different terms don't make sense anymore. So they're not everything supplemental. When I started, a supplemental budget means extra money.
That's what I thought too when I read that. Yeah.
Efficiency means that we're paying bills
Yep. Okay.
and not extra money. The bills that needed were supposed to have been paid that we just put off.
Yep, no, I get you. I understand.
And the last thing is a reconciliation where the previous fiscal year final numbers come in. And don't forget, people pay taxes late in Massachusetts. You can extend your tax payments to October. So when all those accounting is done in the month of October, they have final reconciliation. The governor can file this reconciliation ahead of October, and we're just going to put it into a holding pattern while we're waiting for more numbers to come in. I mean, she could wait till like the first day of October, but does it really matter? It
Right.
really doesn't.
Yep. Okay. No, I got it. Yep. That's enough on that.
Yeah, the more yeah, people want to hear about how we balance checkbooks. We have a comptroller's office. That's how we balance checkbooks.
That's right. More interesting is what the heck is going on at the Cannabis Control Commission?
Oh, that saga. I am scratching my head as much as the rest of you. I had just been scratching my head. I look, I'll be honest. I don't understand why the Treasury didn't just fire Shannon O'Brien right off the bat, as opposed to drag through a $800,000 legal battle over releasing public documents and hearings regarding her suspension. Wouldn't it be easier just to fire her than go to
Well,
over the fire ring as opposed
she
to just.
finally figured that out and did it. Yeah.
I'm very confused by this whole thing. And not like I'm looking at anyone to lose their job, but I mean, one would think that you would go through the proper processes on termination. And for context, folks, some of these appointed positions do have the appointed authority able to terminate the individual, but it has to be with cause. And it's very vague terms like malfeasance, for example. It's a very vague term. But there is case law at the SJC setting a little bit of a guideline exactly, you know, what is malfeasance. Obviously, you commit a crime. The statute pretty much says goodbye. But I mean, in terms of conduct issues, you have to demonstrate that it can't perform the duties properly. And the SJC does have rulings on that. The difference between that lawsuit that was presented over a year now wasn't it? She wasn't terminated. She was
Right.
suspended with
Okay.
pay.
With pay, right. Yes.
And you're fighting over making public the decision on how she was suspended. Like, when they made that information public. And it's very confusing. It got more confusing as it went along. The Globe tried really hard to explain this, and I just got more confused.
I
And
read
now,
that
yeah, and now the end of the saga is that she's now been terminated.
too. Right.
Is this really the end of the saga of the firing?
Well, no, because the lawsuit hasn't been settled yet.
Exactly. So
Yeah.
I'm very confused here about what's going on. Kristi Meyerhouse is the most famous one. Kristi Meyerhouse was fired by Jane Swift at the Mass Turnpike. She went straight to the SJC, concluded the SJC started setting some guidelines on how to terminate an appointed official based on the statute, which is very similar to the Cannabis Commission regarding, you know, crimes and malfeasance. As you see, had ruled in favor of Christie Myhouse that Jane Swift could not demonstrate he committed a crime, nor could she demonstrate that he committed any kind of malfeasance in the conduct of his duties. And he got back on the Turnpike Authority. I
Right.
mean, I know it's ancient history now to some folks, and some young folks are like, who's this? But yeah, I'm just still very confused about how this is all playing out in the Globe, because obviously it's court documents. I don't see the court documents. I just read what I see in the Globe, and I'm just like
Right.
scratching my head still. And Sean Collins, the former director there, is somehow rolled into this drama because he keeps getting mentioned, but there's no like real like where he fits in this play, so to speak. And I'm like, don't know either. Yeah, exactly. Both, like, if you're in audio land, you don't see both of us shrugging our shoulders. But yeah, we're in the
Just yeah, big question marks with no answers, right?
yeah, just we're both just like, I don't know. Again, I'm reading this, I'm like, and again, I mean, as you can tell, I like my institutional knowledge, but yeah, I just don't know where this is going to end up.
Well, at least it's fun to talk about for now.
It is. And I do get people ask me questions about this because I know some of these players. Not like I'm the best friend by any stretch, nor, know that I go to the dinner for, I don't have dinner with them, but I know who they are.
Right.
But I mean, I know the players, but it doesn't mean I know the players, right?
Right.
But it's, I just very, very, like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, but interestingly, it's the industry is thriving.
Well, remember, there's also part of that Globe article about missing cash checks or cash, whatever, deposit fees. The commission, I think the inspector general is it the auditor? One of them, well, both of them, found out the Cancer Commission had not been depositing fees.
Oh, I didn't see that. Oh,
Yeah,
okay.
it's a real thing. I mean, there's a lot more going on there. I mean, we already kind of know the place is screwed up. I mean, duh, it's entire saga is showing it's screwed up. But I think there's a lot more screwed up there than I think we realized. And then, we'll see who got what to say as things kind of unfold. But yeah, I mean, the Globe reported that there's like $2 million or something missing in terms of
Really?
account. Yeah, like not like they paid the commission, but the commission never cashed the checks.
I see. Okay.
Cannabis is not, since it's federally illegal, illegal to federal over cannabis, electronic transactions are really tricky because federally chartered banks won't do cannabis businesses because since it's illegal at the federal level, they could put the charter at risk.
Yes.
State charter banks may take the risk, but
Yep.
probably won't do electronic transactions. So that's
Okay.
why you can't use credit cards, and ATM cards are very difficult because of the nature of the fact that the feds can come after you since it's still federally illegal. So then, which leaves it just basically writing a check or some kind of money
Cash.
order or cash, and you have to give it to the commission. I don't know what the process is. I've not looked that closely in the process of how
Right, right.
payment. But
Huh.
so supposedly, the audits reveal like $2 million of undeposited.
Interesting. If I owned a cannabis company, I'd be like a little upset about that. Just, why did I pay this money if it's not going anywhere?
Well, no, it's worse. I mean, you pay you gave them money that was never used, which is you ne they never took it out of the account unless it was a money order, then it's already out of the account.
Right.
You probably don't have a valid license because you never paid the fee.
Oh, that's a little disconcerting. Yes.
Again, it depends. I just don't know. It's like a whole bunch of money orders that disappeared, or
Right, right.
really, you can't take a money order and cash it for yourself. It's a money order.
Right.
And a money order is already re money removed, meaning
Yeah,
that
it's like withdrawing cash from your account. Yeah.
exactly. And it's very dangerous because if the money order disappears, the money disappears, right?
Right.
And then you have like a check, but the check deposit, they only withdraw when it's been cashed.
Right.
So I don't know. This whole thing is a mess. I'm waiting for the IG and state auditor to go in there and just like find out what's going on. I mean, the speaker actually did something very rare. He went they did a cannabis commission, the state cannabis committee. Dan Donahue, who's the House chair from Worcester, did a hearing on this as a kind of a overview. Speaker showed up and, well, to simplify it, he said we need to take this away from the treasurer's office. I mean, just let's get down to what he said in the end. I mean,
Gotcha.
state
Okay.
service was reporting that, and I was like, wow, okay. I
That's it.
mean,
Yeah, that's big. That's big. Yeah.
that's big, and I don't know what we're going to do, but
Yeah.
clearly that this has risen to the level where the speaker is kind of like, we really need to rethink about this is the proper way to do, this is the proper place to regulate.
All right. Stay tuned to Tacky Talk here, folks. We'll keep you
Yeah,
updated.
I do read sometimes, people. I'm famous for not being a good reader, but it does happen so often.
Anything going on in the district that we should touch on, Techie?
Sure, we had a great Division of Fisheries Wildlife Real Fun Day out at Nut Island. That was great. It was 100 plus people learning to fish, many for the first time. Great job, Division
Neat.
of Fisheries Wildlife. Great job there by MWRA. Property's beautiful out there. Never visited
It
Nut
is.
Island. You should. Great job by Friends of Walson Beach, reminding folks about the importance of clean water and clean beaches. Great job by everyone. They also had an ice cream truck there too, and
Fun.
it was a lot of fun. Perfect weather for it. This weekend, there is a cornhole contest. Cornhole. Somebody, I look. It's the thing where you have the wood. You have the like the circle of the wood, and then you throw these little bean bags
Oh,
into it.
yeah.
And
No, I know what it is. Yeah, I didn't know
just
that
in case
was.
the audience doesn't know,
Oh, okay.
I never knew that was what it was called. I just called it bean
Bean
bag.
bag toss, if you want to call it that or whatever.
Yeah. You know, IBW Local 13 is with the Norfolk County Labor. Norfolk County Central Labor Council is doing a fundraiser for the United Way this Saturday at Local 103 IBW. Great, great of them to do that. The Lieutenant Governor is going to make a visit at some point during the day. Also, it's Chowder Fest in
Oh, it
Hell's
is. Oh, okay.
this Saturday, starting at 2 o'clock. The cornhole starts at 10 a.m. The Chowder Fest starts at 2 in Hell's Neck at the old Hurley Boat Rental, deep at the end of C Street, where C Street ends and C Ave begins by the Quincy Yacht Club. $10 admission, all the chowder you can eat, and the combination of bragging rights from both local restaurants as well as home cooks.
Where's the cornhole at LeBreck Field across the street there?
No, LeBreck Field is a local local 103 IBEW in Dorchester.
Oh, in Dorchester. Okay.
So it's the Electrical Workers Union.
Yeah, you can see it from the highway there.
With the big electronic sign. They have the whole parking lot. So if you'd like to make a donation to United Way, they're doing a fundraiser there for them.
Nice.
And I think it's too late to sign up, but it's like a real cash prize for teams that go play. So
Oh, fun. Okay.
something to keep an eye out for if you like that stuff. Obviously, we had 9/11 yesterday.
Yes.
It's always tough still. I mean, I think the mayor's correct. Everybody remembers where they were.
Oh,
And
no question. In an instant, you can recall it.
yeah, and I remember too. And it's tough standing there because you remember. And then you talk to folks. It's one of those things when you spend time talking to folks and you find out somebody knew somebody, someone, somewhere.
Oh, I have a story I could tell, but I won't. But definitely, yes.
Yeah, that's what I learned too. So it was not like, I was not there, obviously. But it's one of those things that you start. It's a memory trigger whenever you go through this event. It's like I start through all the stories of people who I was talking to, that were in New York or in the vicinity of the place, and hearing their stories. And it's really something that jars a lot of people. It's just because you weren't there doesn't mean that you didn't know someone or. Was with somebody that that has a story to tell, and it's
You
all part.
definitely like either second or third party connected to it if you weren't directly connected to it.
Yeah, it's one of those events when I go to, really just kind of like all those stories come back home.
People might not remember that was an election day too. I recall that there was talk about whether or not they should go forward with the election that day.
Yeah, it was a preliminary city election, which really in the end it was Bill Phelan and Jim Sheets preliminary, because the term I can't, I can't was it Bob Bosey was the third candidate race, I can't remember.
Oh, maybe.
Yeah, and then you had the Moakley seat. Joe Moakley had died, and it was a special election. It was a Democratic primary with four state senators in the town next door. It actually was not included. It was Milton, but yeah, you're right. There was a lot of talk about that. I should cancel the elections as well as cancel the congressional primary. So yeah, we could do a whole episode on that, but
So maybe we should someday.
yeah, so
Maybe for the 25th anniversary in a couple of years if we're still doing this.
yeah. But there's a question whether we're still doing
That's
this.
right. Every week is a gift, folks.
But so I'm going to Quincy District Court this afternoon. There is a drug commencement, drug recovery commencement ceremony today. I don't think I can stay for the whole ceremony, but I think it's important to come and recognize people that made a very strong effort to overcome an illness. And it's illness that doesn't go away. You're just overcoming it for the moment.
Right.
and it's a constant battle, I'm aware. So I'm going to go down to Quincy District Court this afternoon to see that and celebrate with their accomplishments. And I don't think it stayed the whole day. I actually had like back-to-back-to-back stuff today. Then I'm actually at the, tonight actually I had to go to Boston to the Boston Bar Association. The Asian American Lawyers of Massachusetts is doing a panel with my colleague Representative Tram Nguyen and another old friend Dana Huang regarding Asian American politics and pipelines. So that's actually my evening.
Oh, okay, so I'm just the start of your day.
You are the start and star of my day. You are the star of my day, Joe. My star.
Please don't sing. I remember the old TV show Star of the Day.
So, no, today is actually pretty busy. In terms of just bouncing around, it's getting from place to place, I think, is half the challenge in this, but it's part of it. So, and like this week, I was at the Massachusetts Restaurant Association's Asian American Pacific Islander committee. They have like a committee association as part of the overall umbrella. So, got up over there and said hello to folks. And I caught up with my colleague Donna Wong and some meetings he missed. So, I had to catch him up on what happened in those meetings. And making some phone calls to some friends who ran for office that didn't make the cut, and made some calls to some other friends who did make the cut. So that was actually a big part of my past week too, making those phone calls.
Very good. Well, can folks get a hold of you, Techie?
Sure, 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. We are staffed. We are out there. Tacky.chan, TACKEY.CAJN at mahouse.gov. You can email me. I do see all my emails. It's just getting back to you. Staff and I do discuss everything that comes in. And we do log your entire database internally. We have at Tacky Chan on X, formerly known as Twitter. And we have State Representative Tacky Chan Facebook. If you want to see some pictures of wherever I've been, we put some stuff up there as well as some useful information. Yeah. We have tackychin.org, which is just a resource page, but we also have the malegislature.gov. Very much recommended to go to malegislature.gov to look up bills and watch hearings. And you can actually don't have to call me, you can do it yourself these days if you want to. We have, of course, you and me, Joe, on a close to weekly basis. And just want to remind folks lastly about Triple E, it is real. Quincy DPH pickup truck was again near my house. Actually, just around a corner, not even corners, like next to my house over by the marsh here, most likely taking samples. So, again, please be very careful as we go to desk regarding mosquito bites. Massachusetts has the highest infection rate of triple E in the whole country,
Oh, great.
which is a very small number, it's like eight. But I mean, we're not talking about huge numbers here, but it's a big part of that. And of course, I got my red book in the mail.
No, I didn't get mine yet. I'll be looking. Oh, I can't wait to get that. Yeah.
Yep, the vote information for voter is out. You still have time to get a mail-in ballot. You still have time to find out if you're registered and you plan to register to vote. For those who haven't registered to vote, I do understand that Taylor Swift has decided to weigh in, and I'm sure I'm going to see a spike in voter registration, I think, just by her herself at a national level. I really believe that actually that she will drive. Of vote, just because she decided to make a decision this election, she will drive up voter registration by herself. I really believe that.
Well, probably in the younger age demographic for sure, yeah.
Oh yeah, I truly believe it. I'm waiting to see if she puts out any social media like how do you register to vote type stuff. I'm 100% convinced that she's gonna drive up the spike in voter
Well,
registration.
whatever it takes, I guess, right? If you and I were to do that, Tacky, I don't think we'd move the needle much.
No, I'm confident neither one's had any near possible star power nor influence that
And
would.
I'm okay with that. I'm perfectly fine with
You
that.
know, if she can get folks stimulated, interested in elections, more power to it. I am
Absolutely,
absolute
absolutely.
agreement with it. So you may not want to listen to me, but you want to listen to Taylor Swift. I'm not going to fight you.
That's right. All righty. Well, have a great week. We'll check in next week.
Yep, have a wonderful weekend, and then we'll talk soon.